There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Paul Charchian is a world-renowned fantasy football expert and analyst. You can follow him on X on Twitter at Paul Charchian. He is the director of Guillotine Leagues at FantasyLife.com. He has multiple podcasts, which include Fantasy Football Weekly and CHOP. You can find those wherever you get your podcasts. He joins us every Thursday at 11 a.m. during football season, and he's with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Let me just start with our team. Where would you have Marcus Mariota on your quarterback rankings if he ends up being the starter Sunday against Chicago?
Well, I have ranked him. Let me look here. It's not going to be good because the Chicago pass defense is awesome. And you're going to get a close look at the best cornerback in the league, Jalen Johnson. And he is going to flummox Terry McLaurin because that's what he does. And it's going to be problematic for your squad. Mason, let's see, Mariota, I've got him as quarterback 25 this week.
Where would you have Jaden? Where's Jaden?
Oh, well, you know, I'm assuming he's not going, but I have not actually ranked him. But if he does play in this game, it'll probably be around 5 or 6. So that tells you the delta a little bit, but you know, it would be all about the rushing. And this is, again, an extraordinarily hard matchup for a team with one good receiver. When he gets shut down by Jalen Johnson, where does this passing offense go? And I'd love to give you some stats, if you don't mind.
Please.
To help tell you about what you've got on your hands with Jalen, because he is just amazing. In his coverage the last two games, he's given up 5 yards and 6 yards the last 2 weeks in his coverage. Here's what he's done on the season. The way they deploy him is if the opposing team has one good receiver, which your team does, it's just shadow the whole game long. So this is what Terry's going to get. So his average game in his coverage is 1.5 catches for 18 yards. And so you have to be able to run a lot on the Bears, and this game plan will be almost entirely decided upon what kind of productivity you get out of Brian Robinson.
Well, teams have run it on Chicago, actually.
They have.
You know, Jonathan Taylor ran it pretty well. Kyron Williams ran it pretty well. Chuba Hubbard, we talked about him last week, had a very good game against the Bears, albeit in a blowout. The turnovers have really been the deciders for the Bears here in this rejuvenation of their season. Look, they've gotten better and they have weapons. You and I have talked about that already, but they're plus 6 in the turnover margin in their last 3 games.
Yeah, which is probably not sustainable. There's a reason I haven't just come out and just like declared this a Bears victory, and it's because the Commanders can run their way to a win here. I just feel like that's the only pathway to victory, though, almost regardless of quarterback, because then I need Jalen Daniels to run to the team to victory as well. If you're sleeping on the Bears and you're feeling like this is not, this might be an opportunity for an easy win, I don't see it that way.
Well, no, I don't think anybody sees it that way. They're an underdog right now. They're 2.5-3 point underdog at home.
Okay.
It would probably be a pick'em kind of a game, maybe Washington -1 if Jaden ends up playing and he's totally healthy. Tell everybody, because you are an NFC North guy, you're a Minnesota guy, you're a Vikings guy, so you've been paying attention to all of those teams. Just talk a little bit about what Caleb Williams and, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze and Cole Kmet and DeAndre Swift, what they've kind of done and how they've gotten it together here recently.
Yeah, it took a while to get Caleb cooking and get him on track. There was a lot of heat on offensive coordinator Shane Waldron through the first few games of the season, but it's come together nicely. The last three games, it's been a totally different looking offense for the most part with Caleb Williams. He's thrown at an exceptionally high completion rate. His completion rate over the last three games is sitting around 73%, I believe. He's topped a 300-yard mark. He's thrown touchdowns in four straight games. And just the poise and confidence that he's playing with, much, much higher. And they've started giving him a few designed runs, which I think was a mistake early on. I wish they would have given him more, honestly. And you look at how Jaden Daniels has been able to break down defenses with his legs. They did not do that originally. He's getting a few couple of games now. I like that part better as well. DJ Moore had been consistent the whole season, but they're also starting to get productivity now out of all the other guys that you mentioned. Roma Dunze is finally starting to acclimate to the NFL. Keenan Allen heavily involved in the last game, I think two touchdowns in his last game out. So it's all starting to click. Oh, and I didn't even mention this. The running game, which did nothing for three games, has gotten so much better. And the run blocking, way, way better for Chicago. They had a bunch of injuries on their offensive line. Those guys all look like they're in better shape coming out of the bye. So, yeah, this is going to be a really, really tough matchup.
Yeah, I mean, with or without Jaden, and I think people understood that. I still think the key to the game, as it has been with Washington against the better opponents they've played, is whether or not their defense can get off the field. Because against Tampa, against Cincinnati, against Baltimore, they just couldn't get off the field enough. And they were in shootout games. They won one of them. They won that Monday night game at Cincinnati, but they weren't able to pull it off at Baltimore. So that's an interesting part of the game as well. Back to Washington for a moment. If Mariota does go, and you've got him ranked as QB 25 if he does go, I'm assuming that you wouldn't deem anybody else offensively to be startable if you've got him on your team.
Well, I've got starting grades on Robinson for sure, who I really, really like. And I've got him sitting, I think, at running back like six this week. So, I love him. Austin Eckler, to me, remains as a flex-level starter just because he keeps chipping in four catches, 40 yards, 40 rushing yards. He's looked good. I loved what he's brought to the offense. You and I talked about it in the preseason. Loved him then, and it's all worked out great. And then, Zach Ertz is one of the ways you can avoid Jalen Johnson, is you can throw to tight ends. We have seen we've seen Chicago give up a few good games to tight ends, including 102 yards to Evan Ingram the last time out.
Right.
10 targets and 10 catches.
Yeah.
10 targets, 10 catches. So, there's an opportunity, I think, for Zach Ertz to at least contribute meaningfully to this game. And I'd like to see that happen here, too. So I do have some other starters I like. I think Terry McLaurin's the tricky one, though, again.
All right, let's talk about the rest of the league with Charge. You're a Minnesota guy.
Oh, hey,
they lost.
And by the way,
yeah,
Kevin, before we get completely off the Bears, let me mention your next guest up, Courtney Cronin. She covered the Vikings for a while. She was beat for the Vikings here. She's awesome. We love Courtney. We miss her here, and you're going to have a delightful conversation. And really, if it were up to me and I didn't have to go to another hit, I would just sit and listen. I'd just stay on hold, and I'd listen to you chat with Courtney.
We've had Courtney on the show many times. I love Courtney, too. Just to give everybody a heads up, she had to reschedule, so we're going to have her on tomorrow instead.
Okay.
But
all right.
Yes,
sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I remember when she covered your team, and she's been covering the Bears for a few years. She does a great job on ESPN. She's excellent. With respect to tonight, first of all, that I wish I could have sat and watched the game Sunday. I was flipping it around. I didn't watch Vikings Lions as closely.
Sure.
Looked like one hell of a football game with the Vikings defense getting it done there with a touchdown at the end, but. I'm wondering if you think short week at Rams healthier with Kupp, Sam Darnold not as sharp as maybe he was earlier in the year. Before we get to the fantasy implications of tonight's game, I kind of like the Rams. What do you think?
In totality, the Vikings have been so much better than this battered Rams team for most of the year that I want to believe that the Vikings are going to show up and exert their will. They just took the Lions. I think the Lions are the best team in the NFL, and they took them all the way to a one-point win or one-point loss. So I feel like this thing should be pretty heavily slanted to the Vikings, but the intangibles that you mentioned are real. They get Cooper Kupp back, and Kupp has got, God, a glorious matchup in the slot. Vikings just getting murdered by slot receivers. Deebo Samuel, Stephon Diggs, Jaden Reed last week, Amon-Ra St. Brown, all of them top 94 yards. And the Vikings slot cover guy is named Byron Murphy. Yeah. Out of 112 qualifying cornerbacks, he ranks 112th in receptions allowed and 112th in yards allowed in coverage.
That's not good.
That's not good. And here comes Cooper Kupp back, right? And, you know, I got to believe, even though he wasn't healthy enough to play 4 days ago, I got to believe he's going to be heavily involved in the offense 4 days later, and that they're going to get him the ball on a regular basis here. So that particular matchup worries me a lot. You mentioned Sam Darnold, and he's cooled off since the hot start to his season. Through the first month of the season, he led the NFL in touchdown passes, but since Week four, he's only thrown one. They had a bye week in there. He played well last week against the Lions. He actually completed over 80% of his passes. But this is not it's not a trivial matchup. And if there's a name to get to know at the cornerback position, it's Kobe Durant. He's the reigning NFC Defensive Player of the Week.
Yeah,
he had a pick, a sack, and a forced fumble in one game. He's really, really good. And he plays one side of the field, so they don't have to worry about like him shadowing Justin Jefferson. They can just put Jefferson on the other side of the field and let Jordan Addison get hung out to dry against Durant. So I still think the Vikings are going to be able to move the ball here. Justin Jefferson, no 100-yard games, and he addressed that this week in the media saying he needs to get to that plateau, and I think that might happen here.
What has been the issue with Darnold cooling off? Just Darnold?
Maybe, but I think the biggest problem was he was absolutely battered and had taken some huge, huge hits. He had a non-trivial rib injury and hip injury that he had been trying to play through. And then then they had the bye week. And then last week really played pretty well. And he just looked much more fluid than he had before. So I think that was a lot of it was him just playing hurt for a couple of games.
So here's a question for you. We'll get back to some fantasy discussion in a moment. But Denton and I were talking about this yesterday. I think yesterday. Let's just say the 49ers continue to remain a battered football team and they have a very disappointing non-playoff season. Can you pay Brock Purdy $60 million in the offseason?
Well, probably have to, right? I mean, you can't.
You do?
Almost never does a team that's got a, let's call Brock Purdy a B-plus quarterback or a B quarterback. Do you think that's fair?
I think a B quarterback. Remember, part of the context would be if they didn't make the postseason, he was unable to elevate with injuries around him that team to, a 9-8 or 10-7, wild card berth. So you would have that in your mind that he wasn't able to, carry a team. He is truly more of a byproduct of everything around him. Not that there's anything wrong with that, and I think he's a bit better than that, which is why I'd put him at a B. But that would be the context for heading into the offseason, along with a couple of other things that I'll mention if you don't get to.
So, sure, you could, if it does play out that way, the quarterback's always going to take some of the blame for a season that doesn't end with a trip to the playoffs. He did just take your team to the Super Bowl 1 year ago. And you look at, all the things that have been working against him, it's easy to make a case for him struggling with, and really hasn't struggled that much. I mean, he is coming off a 3-interception game. He's coming off the worst game of the season, but that is an outlier. And I don't think he'd had any
two in the Arizona game, I think.
Yeah, that's true. So teams almost never let a B level quarterback walk. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to remember any, Kirk Cousins was allowed to leave Washington, but I mean, almost never does it work out that teams let that kind of player go. They almost always get paid. But the real issue is if this team's drafting 15th in the draft, Where are they going to find their next quarterback? I don't know how
they're going to find their next quarterback. That the perfect point for me to jump in.
Okay.
You guys drafted a quarterback high in the first round. Sam Darnold's on a 1-year deal. They loved Sam Darnold in San Francisco last year.
Yep.
That's the answer.
And that was, that would have to be, you'd almost have to have that agreement already in place, right? Where, you know, if Darnold loved being a 49er, the 49ers liked their season with Darnold, then, that would be the answer, is you pay Darnold instead.
What if you guys win two playoff games?
I mean, somebody's going to... Yeah.
Don't you think, if you guys win two playoff games, but hold on, let me take a step back. How about this rumor out there that Kevin O'Connell is interested in Matt Stafford right now?
No, it's baseless.
Okay.
Totally 100%. Okay. I can assure you that is not at all accurate.
So if, you know, Minnesota, it's going to be hard for them to miss the playoffs, clearly with the schedule the way it looks now and the 5-1 record. They win 10, 11 games, who knows, maybe 12. They win a playoff game or two. It's a good problem to have. Do they re-sign Darnold, or is it J.J. McCarthy because you drafted him so high? And, by the way, you guys liked him in the preseason.
Yeah, we got a very brief look at J.J. McCarthy, one preseason game, and he looked awesome. So, you know, we're extrapolating a first quarter.
That's a bad thing to do.
You know, like, right, it's super, super dangerous, right? And we all know that, but it's hard not to get caught up in that. This is a talker here. You know, what if Sam Darnold is not just good, but what if he's really good and he looks absolutely like a quarterback of the future? Are you really going to not sign him and just hope that J.J. McCarthy is every bit as good, if not better? And it's not like Sam Darnold's old. He's like 25. I mean, it's just, you know, he's got a ton of time left in his career.
Is that all he is 25? My God.
27, excuse me.
Okay, I was going to say, that's
still, right.
He
did get drafted young. You know, he's in his seventh season or whatever. So it's, you know, he started the NFL young. It's going to be a fascinating quandary for the Vikings if it does play out that way, and it might. Vikings look like they are headed to the playoffs. If he wins a game or two, letting him walk would be almost unprecedented in the NFL. And especially with J.J. McCarthy on his rookie deal, boy, the temptation would be to just say, all right, J.J., you're on the Jordan Love path. We're going to try to sign Sam Darnold to a 3-year deal, and, you know, we'll see you in 3 years, J.J.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an apples-to-apples precedent, but the Chiefs trading Alex Smith to Washington, they knew what they had. I mean, Alex Smith, they knew what Alex Smith was at that point, and they, you know, they had a pretty strong indication of what they had in Mahomes.
Right, in that case, Kevin, you know, they got to see every day in practice, they got to see Patrick Mahomes.
Of course.
Because J.J. McCarthy has a knee injury, he's not practicing.
Fair point.
So they don't have any practice basis for knowing what they've got with J.J. A
friend of mine just texted me. He said, how are you missing the obvious play to the 49ers next year? It's Kirk. Kirk's playing well in Atlanta. I can't
really
imagine that Penix gets the opportunity before 2026. That's my guess.
Agreed.
Is that Cousins has 2 years in Atlanta. What do you think?
Yep. No, same. He's playing too well. They've got the luxury of letting Penix continue to learn. By all accounts, he's looked good. But still, you know, the Falcons look like they're going to win this division, especially with the Tampa injuries to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They look like they're going to go win this division, and Kirk's going to get them to the playoffs. And I'd be very surprised if they moved on.
All right, give me Tua. Where would you be if you've got Tua on your roster right now?
So, you know, this thing is really, really tricky, I think. You know, because as big a delta is that there is between Tua and Tyler Huntley, and, you know, that is a big delta. Should Miami regress? It's Skylar Thompson, right, who didn't even play that long. Should Miami regress so badly that they're the lowest scoring offense in the NFL at 10 points per game? you know, in the games that they didn't have Tua in, they're averaging 10 points a game. They just played
Charge.
The Colts, a team.
This is interesting to me because, I think Denton and I talked about this last week. You know, there are a lot of people that are not Tua believers. You know, there's been a real, I don't want to say that he's polarizing, but there's been a lot of discussion. You know, if you had Waddle and Hill and, you know, Achane and the whole, you know, Shanahan style, but look at what they are without him versus with him. Like you just said, I don't think people know how different and how bad they've been offensively without him playing quarterback. He's clearly proven to be super valuable in his loss.
Oh, for sure. But, and I don't disagree with anything you just said, but what does it say about the rest of this offense, Tyreek, Waddle, and Mike McDaniel, that you take one player out, and again, acknowledging the vast delta between Tua and Tyler Huntley, you take one player out, and you have a totally non-functional offense. Completely non-functional. It's a little bit apples and oranges.
It says they did a terrible job with their backup quarterback.
And that's it. 10 points a game. You just, you know, I don't know. I just don't know that you reinsert Tua in and automatically you go back to being the offense that Miami had last year, for example.
Right.
I don't know that. I just don't know if it's that simple. This thing might be more systemic problems than just Tua can fix.
Right.
We'll find out.
I'm just looking to see. In the opener, he threw for 338 and a touchdown, but they only scored 20 points in the game against Jacksonville, a game they won. All right, what else is headline worthy? How about Hopkins in Kansas City? Worth a start this week or not?
Well, before I get into that, tell me, do you think DeAndre Hopkins, and I'll give you in a minute, I'll tell you his numbers and his ranks. Tell me if you think he's a Hall of Famer.
God, I haven't thought about
tricky one, isn't it?
And my gut instinct, I like doing this, so I appreciate that you asked me without giving me any sort of sense. I'm going to say that he is a Hall of Famer.
In 12-year career to this point, and I think this is going to be it, by the way. I think I'm guessing this is the last year. In receptions all time, he's 19th, 942 receptions. In yards, he's 23rd, over 12,000 yards.
Wow.
And in touchdowns, he's 33rd, 79 touchdowns.
That's not Hall of Fame.
I don't think it is.
I mean, you know why it isn't? Because if you're 19th in yards having played in this era, you're just not a Hall of Famer. I mean, what are the other active wide receivers? I would assume Devontae and Mike Evans are up there on yardage and receptions because both of those players to me are Hall of Fame players.
Yep, those are the only two active players. Evans and Adams are the only two. Nicely done, by the way. Jeez, what a pull. Those are the only
Evans,
two active
Evans, to me,
players.
Is the one that never gets the credit, and all he does is put up 1,000-yard seasons every single year of his career. I think he's been
only
wildly underrated.
Yes. Agreed. You know, he's above Devontae Adams in at least, you know, receiving touchdowns and a few other metrics as well. He's currently, in receiving touchdowns, he's tied for 9th all time. I mean, Mike Evans is getting in. It's not even
a
debate.
What about yards? I'm pulling up the Pro Football Reference too as we speak. Where is Evans in yards? Is he in the top 20 already?
Evans is 30.
He's
all 30th. Time in yards.
He's 30th right now. Interesting.
Below Hopkins
is ahead of him.
So there's this.
Yeah.
When the Commanders have faced whatever team Hopkins was on, whether it was, you know, Houston or Arizona or Tennessee, was it always like, well, we got to stop DeAndre Hopkins? Like, job number one is we have to not let DeAndre Hopkins beat us. Because to me, that is the...
There were years in Houston where I think that was true. There were years in Houston where you had to stop DeAndre Hopkins. But if you're heading towards... what is he now? I said the same thing yesterday. I go, is he really that good now? Or, you know, at 30, what is he, 32, 33 years old? I mean, what are the Chiefs actually getting? Is that where you're headed with this?
Well, kind of. I mean, it's a little bit, the numbers are so bad right now. He's averaging 2 catches for 28 yards this year,
right.
But he's been playing in the Tennessee offense. So it's hard to know if E-Hop is completely cooked. Is he basically an IHOP pancake, or is he just the victim of incredibly bad quarterbacking? Or maybe they're both true. Maybe those are not mutually exclusive things. And now he joins the Chiefs, and it feels like he's just another guy that's going to be in this ridiculous rotation of, like, you know, Hardman and Juju Smith-Schuster and Justin Watson and Sky Moore. I don't see him, like, taking command of this receiver room at this stage of his career like he would have 3 years ago. It doesn't seem like he's got that in him anymore. And one other thing I'll mention. It's not like Patrick Mahomes is this wizard who suddenly grants his wide receivers fantasy football superpowers. That's just not the Mahomes that we've got right now.
No, he just makes every big throw when it matters, or every big run when it matters.
Yes, exactly. But in totality, he's not. Patrick Mahomes right now is 16th in passing yards in the league and 24th in passing touchdowns.
I know. It's crazy.
Mm.
I said yes, and then you talked me out of it. I think after pulling up his career, I might talk myself back into it. And here's why. Like, whenever I think about these players, we've had this conversation about, like, Brian Mitchell as an example. You know, Devin Hester got into the Hall of Fame to clear the way for maybe other returners. You may or may not know this. You probably do because you're a true NFL historian. Brian Mitchell's second in league history in all-purpose yardage.
All-time yards.
Jerry Rice, barely behind Rice. But
unreal.
His career was as much about longevity as anything else. Not that that should be a knock at all. He was never necessarily over a several-year period of time the best at his position. Devin Hester was. Devin Hester, there was no doubt during his time, he was the best returner and the most feared returner in the game. Brian wasn't that every year of his career. He was in the top two or three of most feared. Hopkins, for a couple of years, was considered to be an elite wide receiver. He was a first-team All-Pro player 3 years in a row, and a second-team All-Pro player a fourth time. Five times he made the All-Pro team, three times the All-Pro first team. That speaks to elite.
Is that enough, though? Those were great years. Let's call them five great seasons.
Right.
Is that enough to put you in the Hall of Fame? I don't know. I feel like I need a more long-term domination than that for my taste, and that's why, like, Mike Evans in. To me, Hopkins out, but it's close. We're
I'm with you. Evans, to me, immediately, if you had asked me that, I would have said Mike Evans is in. Yeah, Mike Evans is a Hall of Famer. Yeah, Devontae Adams, 100%. Absolute Hall of Famer at this
point.
For
sure. Those guys, those guys are getting in, and those are his contemporaries and closest contemporaries.
Real quickly, we always get a bit sidetracked, which is fine because I enjoy it. Lamar Jackson, to me, is as much of a slam dunk to win the MVP not even halfway into the season as we've seen in a long time. Do you agree or disagree?
It's right now, it feels like a one-man race. The other guy I'm going to put into this conversation, you and I might have touched on this a couple of weeks ago. Jared Goff it's just not the explosive season. He's completing like every pass. It's weird. And I know it's a fantasy football world out there and Lamar Jackson is killing it, but I feel like the one guy that could end up being a factor. It might be Jared Goff, but that's right now. Jackson's just running away with it again. He's already got two, right? So this would be three
this
for him.
Would be third, yeah.
Yeah.
He's already. I mean, he could be injured and never play again, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Two-time MVP.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're closing in on that. We're closing in on that. Get this.
We need to go get a beer or seven and solve all of the NFL Hall of Fame.
That's right. All
questions.
Right. Well, we should be voters, frankly. I'll mention this.
Yeah.
Back to fantasy for a second. The highest scoring player in fantasy football is Lamar Jackson. The second highest scoring player is Derrick Henry.
Yeah, he's
the same team. It's just
all right. Enjoy the weekend. No. Enjoy tonight. I'll talk to you next week.
Next week, we should maybe we get into the thorny discussion about Art Monk's Hall of Fame career.
Please tell me you understand that it was a Hall of Fame career.
I don't know. I'll give you the opportunity to make a lot of friends in this town. I know
When he finally got in, it was long overdue.
It's all about just longevity, right? This is a total longevity play, and I don't know. Now, if you're going to use like your All Pro, that we probably shouldn't start this conversation.
Well, Art, look,
but someday.
Here's what you can just say about Art Monk. Okay, when he left the game, he was the all-time leading pass receptions leader. Isn't that pretty much by definition a Hall of Famer?
A lot. Well, yes and no. It's certainly to the longevity of it, but he was, you know, if you're going to use your All Pros, he was an All Pro two times. You know,
yeah,
I don't think defenses, you know, there were a lot of times. In fact, I would guess most of his career, he wasn't the best receiver on his own team.
No, he was the best all-around receiver on his own team. He was an excellent blocking wide receiver. He was part of a team that, for much of Joe Gibbs, not 91, they were smash mouth, Riggo, running game, and Monk was, you know, that possession receiver that helped move the chains. He was... Look, I've heard the arguments against, and they're not unjustifiable, you know, in terms of lack of All Pros, lack of, you know, he wasn't the best receiver in the game, understood. I think the overall package, it was long overdue when he got in. We'll talk about that another time. I got to roll.
Deal. Okay. Bye-bye.
Sharch, everybody, we'll do some Denton news next.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
We'll get to Denton news in a bit, but I did want to, off of the conversation with Charch, which veered into a Hall of Fame discussion, there were cutdowns on the candidates for the 2025 class, including the senior consideration. The seniors down to 31 players. Jake is on the list. Joe Jacoby is still on the list. I mean, fingers crossed, this is... Certainly, among these guys. I mean, there are names on there like Ken Anderson, a quarterback. I always felt like watching him, he felt like a Hall of Fame quarterback. He was a league MVP in 81. They've got Plunkett on the list. Plunkett won two Super Bowls. I don't view him, honestly, as a Hall of Fame quarterback. I think Anderson was a much better quarterback. Those Raider teams, the Oakland Raider team in 81 and then the Raiders of 83, the Raiders of 80 and then the Raiders of 83 that won Super Bowls with Plunkett, they were not Plunkett quarterback-led Super Bowls. Defense, Marcus Allen in the second one, threw the deep ball really well, was not Ken Anderson. But of everybody on this list, I mean, Jacoby's got to be among the people being seriously considered off this senior list. Let's hope on that one. Now, on the modern era player list, they're down to 50 for the class of 2025. And you have Brian Mitchell on the list, and you have London Fletcher on the list. We've been through this a million times. No reason to get into it in depth. The bottom line is London's career does stack up resume-wise with linebackers that are in the Hall of Fame, inside linebackers, middle linebackers who are inside in the Hall of Fame already, by the way, including Ray Lewis. But I would kind of view London in the same way I view Brian, and that is it's more longevity. He was never the best player at the position during his time. You know, Ray Lewis obviously was. Devin Hester obviously was. Brian was certainly among the top two or three returners for a long period of time. Was he ever as feared as Devin Hester? I don't think so. But I also would never use as a knock against Brian's career the longevity. In, if anything, it's a testament to just how incredibly tough, durable, etc. And I've always said this about B. Mitch. I think one of the real underrated talking points of his career is not quantifiable necessarily by numbers. It's just how big he played in the biggest games that he was involved in his career. You go back to Washington, and he played really well as a running back in playoff games in 92. As a returner, he played big in Washington and then in Philly. Huge. In Washington, you know, his last game here in the 99 season, the January 2000 playoffs against Tampa Bay, he returned the opening kickoff of the second half 100 yards for a touchdown that gave Washington, I think, a 13-0 lead. They didn't win that game, but that's as close to an NFC title game as they ever got. You know, under the Snyder regime. Remember, 99 was Snyder didn't have a chance to screw up the team because he didn't take over the team until late. And then in Philly, in some of those championship games at the Vet against Atlanta, against Tampa, he was huge. But the first time eligibles on this list, Denton, Eli Manning, I don't think he gets in the first time. That's my guess. I think he's eventually going to get in. I don't think he gets in on the first time. Marshawn Lynch, he's not getting in on the first time. Joe Staley, Marshall Yanda, Luke Kuechly, I think could get in on this first run. First time eligible. Terrell Suggs, Earl Thomas, Adam Vinatieri, all first time eligibles. I would wager if one makes it as a first-time eligible, it would be Kuechly from that list. What would you say?
I think we did this the last time this list was talked about, and I think I'm going to go with Marshall Yanda. You know, obviously, he's a guard, not like the sexiest position in the world, but I think in 13 years, I'm pulling up now in 13 years, he's a seven-time All-Pro, two-time first-team, five-time second-team, and an eight-time Pro Bowler on the All-Decades team. So I'd go Marshall Yanda getting in there.
That is impressive. I do remember that conversation now. That is really impressive. Kuechly was a seven-time Pro Bowler, a five-time All-Pro. He was the 2013 Defensive Player of the Year. I think he was a runner-up another time. Kuechly made the Pro Bowl in every single year of his career, except his rookie year when he was the Defensive Rookie of the Year. So there is that. I think Keekley's in. I think both guys are getting in.
Because like that defense, sorry. I think both guys get in first time, to be honest. And I think that defensive player of the year is, I would say a defensive player of the year carries more weight than like a X amount All-Pro. Unless you're an All-Pro like eight times. He's what, a four-time All-Pro, you said? Five-time All-Pro?
Five-time All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, I would say defensive player of the year accounts for like two or three All Pros, if we're to like wager that out.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if he was close to a Defensive Player of the Year in any other year. I thought, okay, he finished third in 2015, which would have been the year they went to the Super Bowl, right? Isn't 2015 the year they played Denver in the Super Bowl? 2016.
Yeah, that was when Cam was MVP too. 2015.
By the way, he was in the Defensive Player of the Year, he was behind J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald that year. And just ahead of Josh Norman, who was on his team. All right, Denton's News. I'm back.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, let's start. We talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the show, but congratulations to the Caps. Five in a row, they beat the Flyers 6-3. Ovi scores his second goal of the season. That's now 8.55 on the career, 39 away from tying Gretzky. So we can care about Alex Ovechkin's goal chase, Kevin, and the team is winning. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I mean, they were not predicted to, look, it's early in the season. They were not predicted to be, you know, they're kind of a borderline playoff pick in the Eastern Conference. right? I think that's what it was. We went through some of those previews last week or 2 weeks ago before the season started. So this is obviously a surprise, a pleasant surprise. Good for them beating the Flyers back-to-back nights. And, having a team that's playing competitively while also being invested in the Ovechkin chase of Gretzky is, it's the happiness edge.
Wizards start
even when he doesn't score.
Yeah.
He doesn't score a goal. If they win, it's great.
It's great
when
he does
score. If he scores a couple
goals
and they lose, you're still happy.
And it's even better when he scores goals and they win.
Right.
It's like good teams win, a great team score, win when Alex Ovechkin scores. That's the saying, right? How about the Wizards starting their season off tonight? I'm excited to see Alex Saar. I don't know. My expectations are kind of fluid at this point just because the team's not going to win a bunch of games. But I am excited to see what Alex Saar is going to do against the defending champs, the Boston Celtics, in town tonight at Cap One Arena.
Yeah, I looked up the line early this morning. They're 14-point underdogs.
Oh, jeez.
In their opener.
Lord have mercy.
I want to see what he looks like. I want to see Bub Carrington. People are excited about him. We had Chase Hughes on the show yesterday. He said Kyshawn George has really impressed a lot of people out there. I want to see Koulibaly in his second year. I thought what we saw from Koulibaly in his first year as a 19-year-old was very encouraging. Very encouraging. Just the way he plays, the attitude, the confidence level, and just the length that he has defensively, the ability that he has defensively. I mean, I can see Koulibaly 5 years from now being an absolute stud defender, but also a good two-way player. I'm not saying a great two-way player, but a good two-way player and a massive starting contributing player on a team that's good. Let's see him take another step forward. Because, on that front end to the gold medal game, there were games where he barely got even time. Like, that's not a knock. He was 20 years old, 19 years old, or whatever it was during the Paris games. And France was loaded with, by the way, veteran players. But I'm looking forward to seeing him. Last year, Denton, was such a tune-out year because Tommy told me this this morning or yesterday, this morning actually, that Michael Winger, or Will Dawkins, described what they were going through as a deconstruction phase. Have you heard that?
I think we played that clip.
Okay.
If he said it publicly.
I mean, that's really trying to really sell what you're doing. Look, they're basically in teardown mode. Okay, they are in, let's blow this building up and let's start building it brick by brick. And the bricks are coming from all of these accumulated draft choices, and they've got to find, a couple of, one per class the next 3 years that are, significant high-end contributors to a contending team. And of course, we know that the 2025 class includes what many believe to be a transcendent player in Cooper Flagg. And you hope to have a shot at him, which means you got to win like 18, 19 games again, 20 games. They won 15 last year. Hard to get into an NBA team during deconstruction phase. It is easier to just come up for air after deconstruction's over and the building's starting to form. But I will watch early in the season. I always do, and I did last year, just to see some of these young players and to see what they look like.
Did you see any of the Suns-Clippers game last night?
I did.
The Clippers, they debut this new stadium, the Intuit Dome, which looked very nice, and they have the wall, which is a section behind one of the baskets. It's 51 uninterrupted rows of seats, with the first 13, which are in direct view, if you're an opponent standing at the free throw line, are diehard fans that are vetted by the franchise. So the franchise, well, I don't know what their vetting process was, but I'm sure they conducted some sort of interview to make sure that you are a diehard fan. It is essentially a pro student section. So you're wild out there. You're making all these crazy things. I mean, Kevin Durant was a little flustered by it. He said after the game, like, I haven't experienced something like that since I was in college. Now, it didn't do much for the Clippers. They lost 116-113, and Kevin Durant had 25. But I think that's a very cool thing to do, to kind of, for a franchise that has always been the little brother to the Lakers, to at least give yourself some opportunity to stand out.
Look, we Maryland fans are very used to that setup. The wall at Comcast Center, at Xfinity Center, which the opposing team goes towards and shoots into in the second half, when it is packed and raucous, it is intimidating. And it is very impactful in games. And so it was cool to see that at the NBA level. And yet, Durant said it was crazy. I was just staring at it the whole time. You're not used to that in the NBA. And he missed a couple of free throws, key free throws. So it's really cool. Now, you know, for that to be continue to be an impactful section, the team has to be good, you know, and you've got to have games that matter. Other than that, you know, aside from that, all you're just hoping for is just a free Chick-fil-A, you know, sandwich after a couple of missed free throws. The game itself was actually, for a first game of the year for both teams, was really intense, in part because of the crowd. You know who played well last night? And he played well in overtime, and he was clutch in overtime. Bradley Beal. Now, he had a turnover. It was so, like, when it happened, I'm like, that's so Brad. Just kind of unforced error in a critical situation. But he hit a big three. He got to the free throw line. I'm looking at his stat line right now.
He's 4-6 from three.
8-for-12 from the floor, 4-for-6 from behind the arc, 4-for-5. He had some big made free throws in overtime. And he was their second leading scorer, finished with 24 to Durant's 25, and they won in overtime, 116-113. Remember, that team last year, everybody thought, but it didn't happen. We'll see. The West is still loaded. It'll be interesting. I wanted, before you get to your next news item, actually, we can't do that right now. What is your next news item?
So we have a little bit of an announcement. You know, we're trying, between myself and Craig, we're trying to bolster the Team 980's YouTube page a little bit. So I started a new web series on the Team 980's YouTube page. It's called Denton's Office. Episodes drop every Thursday. So everyone go to the Team 980's YouTube page, subscribe to it, smash the like button, send it to your mom, send it to your brother. If you got beef with someone in your family, send it to them too. We'll make bridges between you and your family. But I'm excited about the project. It just gives me a little bit of...
Explain to me what the project, Denton's Office, what are you going to do on this?
So it's literally just going to be like a weekly video that's anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes, nice and short and sweet, just talking about some of the bigger storylines that are going on with the Commanders. So this week was about Jane Daniels' rib injury and how concerned we should be about Jane Daniels' rib injury. So it's something that you can watch. You can watch it quickly if you're sitting at home, if you got kids that want to get invested in the Commander stuff. It's family friendly, so go and check it out.
Denton's Office. Team980.com. YouTube. We'll do some NFL power rankings next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.